This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, a conversation with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann. Each semester, Mawira and her colleagues work with groups of master students, and variously the Masters of Sustainable Business at the University of Otago, and send them out with an assignment to create a podcast, which we play on this show in a series called Coming Up for Air. We've got three of those we're squeezing in today. We've got Tom Colburn talking with Jack from the Gutter Guys. We've got William Lusk talking e-waste with Harry Pike, and Zen Chin talking green buildings. Let's get going with Tom.
Hi, I'm Tom, and this is a podcast where we shine a light on local business leaders doing interesting and meaningful things in our communities, with a key focus on sustainability. Today we're talking about a business that has been part of Dunedin for years, passed down from mate to mate, and is tackling one of the city's messiest challenges, keeping properties in shape and dealing with piles of waste that build up, especially in student areas. It's called Gutter Guys. They handle everything from cleaning gutters, mowing lawns, to scrubbing exteriors and hauling rubbish away. But what makes their story worth telling is the ways they're finding cleaner and better ways to do it, and connecting the bigger conversations about waste, property care, and the way the city looks itself. My guest today is Jack, one of the current owners. We'll be talking how he got here, what the job is really like, and thoughts about the current research and news about student waste. Hey Jack, long time no see.
Yeah, good to see you.
Thanks for joining me. I know you're a really busy man, and I really appreciate it. Let's keep it simple. Whereabouts are you originally from?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Dunedin. I've always been quite a hands-on guy. I've never really liked the idea of an office job. I started doing odd jobs for mates and landlords when I was a teenager, and eventually took over Gutter Guys from a friend who was moving away. It's kind of a tradition now, passed down through mates over the years, and I learned the ropes on the job, and once I got settled, I started tweaking things and making it run a lot cleaner and smarter.
Yeah, so Jack, this business has been around for a while now, passed down a few times. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I took it over about 2 years ago. My mate trained me up before he left town. I saw there was a real potential to modernise things, especially around the waste handling and the gear we use. I started small, just me and a trailer, and now we've got a couple part-timers and a solid client base. We've built trust with landlords, tenants and student flats. Word of mouth has been massive for us.
Yeah, I can imagine word of mouth would be massive. Yeah, so Jack, what actually matters for you most in life, both in running business and outside of it?
Doing honest work, really. No shortcuts, no dodgy dumping, just helping people. Whether clearing a block gutter or sorting out a messy flat, keeping the city clean, especially the neighbourhoods that get overlooked. Running a business that doesn't just make money, but actually improves things is a huge thing for me.
Mm. Yeah, so Jack, I was actually reading a recent RNZ piece about Dunedin student flats. Some left with mould, some with rubbish, even furniture dumped on the street. As someone who's often called to clean up, what's your take on that? Have you ever seen it firsthand?
Yeah, well, honestly, we see it every semester. Couches dumped on the footpath, broken fridges, bags of rubbish left out for weeks. It's shocking. Some flats are in the worst condition. Mould, blocked gutters, lawns that haven't been touched in months. It's not just messy, it's unsafe. We've seen water damage from blocked downpipes and rats in rubbish piles. That's why we started doing flat rescue cleanups. We clear out the junk, salvage what we can, and recycle the rest.
Yeah, smart. Yeah, so Jack, there's also some research I came across. It talks about waste hierarchy, reduce, reuse, recycle. And some small businesses can play a big role in keeping materials in use instead of sending them to the landfill. What does that idea fit in with you and the Gutter Guys?
That's honestly how we operate now. We sort everything before it goes anywhere. Green waste gets composted or mulched. We donate it to the community gardens. Usable furniture goes to op shops, metal to scrap yards, e-waste to proper recycles. We've cut our landfill loads by more than half by just sorting properly. We also use electric mowers and blowers. They're quieter, no fumes, and we charge them off solar panels at the sheds. And we've also switched to biodegradable sprays, which is, you know, it's notably better for the gardens and stormwater runoff.
Yeah, interesting. So Jack, with these biodegradable sprays, have they actually increased the cost for your guys' business?
Oh, very, very minimally. Of course it increased the cost, but as long as we're still making a profit, we're happy to do it for the better of the environment.
Oh, that's really good of you guys, Jack. You've mentioned a few things already. Electric tools, storing waste, composting. But I want to ask you directly, how are you guys trying to be more environmentally conscious in a way that you run Gutter Guys?
Well, we've made a real effort to clean up how we operate, literally and environmentally. We've switched to electric mowers and blowers. They're quieter, no fumes, and better for the neighbourhood. We use biodegradable cleaning sprays, safer for gardens, your pets, and anything that runs off into the drains. We started composting all of our green waste, grass clippings, leaves, moss, and we donate that all to the community gardens. We sort everything before disposal, furniture goes to op shops, metal to scraps, e-waste to certified recyclers. It's not perfect, but we're always looking for ways to improve, because these small changes always add up.
Jack, was there a defining moment that made you conscious about the way you handle your waste or run your business? And have your views changed since then?
Yeah, definitely. The first big student flat cleanout. We saw how much perfectly good stuff was getting dumped. We pulled out working appliances, solid furniture, even unopened food. That was the moment I realised we could do so much better. Since then, we've built waste diversion into every job. It's just part of how we work now.
Right, so how would you define what good property care looks like in Dunedin? Is it about keeping things tidy, or is there more to it?
It's definitely more than just tidiness. It's about prevention, keeping gutters clear, lawns trimmed, and rubbish sorted so bigger problems don't happen. Good care means less damage, fewer pests, and happier tenants. It's also about respect for the property, of course, the neighbours and the environment. We've had landlords tell us about their tenants staying longer when the place is looked after properly.
Have you ever faced an ethical dilemma in your work? Maybe pressure to cut some corners or dump waste somewhere where it shouldn't go? And how have you handled that?
Yeah, we've definitely had a few. One landlord asked us to dump everything from a flat into a skip. No sorting, no recycling. But we pushed back, offered to do it properly, and showed them how it would actually save them money. Sometimes you get asked to just get rid of it. But we've built a reputation on doing things right. We've walked away from jobs that didn't sit right and just didn't seem worth it.
One simple thing you think people, whether it's students, landlords or homeowners, could do to make their job easier and the city cleaner?
I'd just say sort your waste. Even just separating recyclables from general rubbish makes a huge difference. Don't dump your furniture. Someone else can use it, or we can take it to a charity. As that saying is, another man's trash is another man's gold. Keep your gutters clear. It prevents water damage from and saves you money in the long run. And mow your lawns before it turns into a jungle. We'll still do it, but it's a lot easier when it's maintained.
Yeah, I could imagine, Jack.
Yeah, so Jack, what's the weirdest thing you've ever found in a gutter? Or, you know, just cleaning out in general?
Oh, man, we've found all sorts of things. One time we pulled a full set of cutlery out of a gutter. Another time someone had stuffed a teddy bear into a downpipe. No idea why. We found old phones, socks, even a pair of jandals halfway up a roof. Student flats are always full of surprises. You never know what's going to turn up.
Have you noticed any attitudes changing among students or landlords over the years?
Yeah, just slowly but surely. Some landlords are starting to care more about long-term maintenance, not just quick fixes. Students are, they're a hit and miss really, but we've had a few flats where they've sorted their rubbish properly and even asked us about composting. I think people are more aware now. They just need the tools and support to do the right thing, really.
Is there a job that you'll never forget, for better or worse?
Yeah, there was a flat we cleaned out last December. Absolute chaos. Rubbish everywhere, broken furniture, food left in the fridge for weeks. But we managed to salvage over 300 kilos of stuff. Furniture, electronics, even kitchenware. And donated it all. The charity we dropped it off to said it was their biggest single day haul of the year. That felt pretty good to us.
Do you ever get any pushback from clients when you try to do things more sustainably?
Oh, sometimes, yeah. A few people just want the cheapest option, like dump everything and be done with it. But when we explain how sorting stuff saves money on landfill fees, helps the community, most do come around. We've had clients thank us later when they realise how much we reused or recycled. It's all about showing the true value, not just the cost.
So what's something about your job that people probably don't realise?
Honestly, how much problem solving goes into it. It's not just mowing lawns or clearing gutters. Sometimes we're figuring out drainage issues, spotting early signs of damage, or helping landlords avoid big repair bills. And the waste side of it, people don't realise how much can be reused if you just take a second look. We're not just cleaning, we're kind of like the first line of defence for a property.
Jack, I've just got one more question before I let you go. If you could change or create one regulation or policy to make property maintenance and waste handling better in Dunedin, what would it be?
That's a good one. I'd probably say mandatory waste sorting for rental properties, especially student flats. Incentives for businesses using electric tools or composting green waste. More support for the community recycling hubs. It would make it easier for people to do the right thing. And maybe a seasonal cleanup fund. Help cover costs for end of semester rubbish removal. Something like that.
Jack, really appreciate you sharing your story. It's easy to see property maintenance as just another service. But the way you approach it really shows there's a lot more behind the scenes. From keeping homes safe and cutting waste, to clearing what actually goes into the landfill. That's all from me today. I'm Tom. Thank you for tuning in. And cheers again to Jack.
It's remarkable that we can cut the waste in half simply by sorting. And that defining moment of doing better, realising that we could do so much better. I like that. Next up, we have William Lusk.
Welcome back to Blowy Bubbles, where we explore the real-world challenges and opportunities in sustainable business. I'm William Lusk, a master's student in sustainable business at the University of Otago. And like many of you, I rely on my devices daily. But here's the catch. Every phone, every charger, every little gadget we depend on eventually ends up in waste. Globally, we're creating mountains of it. E-waste is the fastest growing waste stream on the planet, from smartphones to chargers. These devices are being discarded at record levels, often ending up in landfills rather than being reused or recycled. Today's episode unpacks this challenge from three angles: the academic research that helps us understand the issue, how the media is covering its impacts here in New Zealand, and how local entrepreneurs are stepping up with innovative solutions. To bring it to life, I'm joined by a good friend and flatmate, Harry Pike, the co-founder of SoloBoost, a startup that began with single-use portable chargers and has since pivoted to rechargeable, compact devices. His journey shows us how small businesses can play a surprisingly big role in tackling global sustainability problems. Hey, Harry, thanks for being here.
Hey, Will, how you going?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Let's start with the bigger picture. A 2023 study by 40 and colleagues in Nature Sustainability projected that global e-waste will reach 82 million tonnes by 2030, if current trends continue. That's more than the weight of every commercial aircraft ever built. The key problem, they argue, is that many devices are discarded long before the end of their technical life. Repair is often too costly, or the products weren't designed for reuse. At the same time, consumer demand for sustainability solutions is rising. People increasingly want electronics that last longer, can be repaired, and don't contribute to throwaway culture. Scholars highlight design choices like moldarity, reusability, and recyclability as crucial for lowering the footprint. So while e-waste is daunting, it also opens up opportunities for businesses that are willing to innovate with circular economy principles. The issue in the news. This isn't just an academic talk. Earlier this year, the New Zealand Herald reported that New Zealanders generate around 20 kilograms of e-waste per person every year, one of the highest rates globally. The article pointed out that small electronics such as chargers and headphones often slip through the cracks of formal recycling systems. Because they're cheap and easy to replace, they're often just thrown away. This kind of coverage highlights both the scale of the problem and the potential for innovation. Businesses that design products for reuse and durability have the chance to lead, which brings us neatly to our case study today, SoloBoost. My guest today is Harry Pike, founder of SoloBoost. SoloBoost first launched with single-use portable chargers, handy for one-off energy boost, but as sustainability concerns grew, Harry made the bold choice to pivot towards rechargeable, reusable devices. That decision shaped not only his company, but also how it contributes to tackling the e-waste problem. Harry, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Will, how are you going?
So I'll get into a few questions for you. So before we dive into SoloBoost, could you share a bit about your background, where you grew up, what you like to do in your spare time?
Yeah, I'm originally from Hawke's Bay up north. Fourth year, just completed my Bachelor of Entrepreneurship, majoring in management. I'm off to London next year, which is really exciting. I'm into my football, a lot of my golf, and just really enjoy hanging with mates.
Oh, very good. Would you say entrepreneurship was always on your radar?
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. My dad was an entrepreneur a couple of years ago, so a good few years back nowadays. But yeah, so it's always been on my mind, always something I've been passionate about wanting to do.
When you first launched SoloBoost, what was the problem you were aiming to solve?
Well, first of all, the first time we saw the problem was when me and Jet were at Rhythm and Vines, and we've both had dead phones, couldn't contact any friends, had no way of calling a ride home. And it was actually quite a big safety issue. We figured that actually thousands, if not millions of people around the world at festivals are actually undergoing this issue. So we thought something needs to be solved here.
Oh yeah, no, it's very true. I've been through the same thing. You began with single-use chargers. At what point did you realise that wasn't sustainable, both environmentally and commercially?
At the start, single-use felt right. Felt like the right call because it made things easy. You just rip it open and you're sorted. But pretty quick, we started getting pushback around sustainability. Festivals especially were saying, hey, this is cool, but what about the waste? And we felt the same way. From a business side too, we realised that if we stuck with our disposable models, we'd eventually hit a ceiling. So that's when we pivoted into the rechargeable pre-charge models. That way, we still keep convenience and the safety factor, but people could reuse and recharge again, again, and again. Looking back, it was definitely the right move. It's helped us line up with both what the customers want and what the world actually needs.
Sustainability-focused startups often face unique hurdles: funding, supply chain challenges, or educating customers. What do you think has been your biggest challenge so far, and how did you overcome it?
Yeah, good question, Will. I'd say the hardest part has been education, getting people to understand what makes SoloBoost different. Power banks aren't new, but ours come pre-charged, so they're ready to use straight away. That's a bit of a new concept, so we've had to do a lot of explaining. Then on the practical side, getting the product made right was a massive learning curve. Things like packaging, trying to make it waterproof and protective, but also not overly wasteful. Finding that balance between cost, sustainability, and usability hasn't been easy at all.
Well, that's quite interesting. Another question. On the flip side, what's been the most rewarding moment of this journey when you felt, yeah, this is working?
For me, the best moments are seeing people actually use it and get it. Like at festivals, someone's stressing because their phone's dead. They grab a solar boost and suddenly they can text their mates, call a ride, and feel at ease. That's the exact reason why we made it in the first place. Another big one was when organisers from big festivals started reaching out to us. It made you step back and think, wow, the idea we came up with as students is actually starting to catch on and get major attention. Those are the moments that keep you going.
Okay, thanks for that. So we're just going to link research to reality. The research I mentioned earlier shows that designing for reuse and longevity is crucial. How do these principles show up in Solo Boost design choices?
First of all, we kept it really simple but durable. The chargers are compact with a 3000 mAh battery, so for most phones that gives you about 60 to 80% charge, enough to get you out of a sticky situation. The main thing is that they come pre-charged, so you've got that instant emergency ready feel. But instead of throwing it away after one use, you can recharge it again. It's the mix of confidence and sustainability that makes Solar Boost stand out.
Yeah, I can't say that it is a very new and innovative idea. Just another question. So the media has reported on New Zealand's high e-waste rates. From your perspective, are New Zealanders becoming more aware of this issue? What role do you think small businesses like yours can play in helping close the gap?
Yeah, definitely. Especially in the festival and event scene, people are really tuning into sustainability. Audiences don't want wasteful products anymore, and organisers are actually under pressure to do better. That's a big reason why we switched to rechargeable. It wasn't just what we wanted, it's what the customers wanted and the way the market was heading. I think more Kiwis are starting to see just how bad e-waste is. Small electronics like chargers often get tossed because they're cheap, but it adds up to a massive amount of e-waste. That's where businesses like ours can help. We're giving people the option to be sustainability and reuse our product. And that's where I believe a business like ours can make a small difference, not just locally, but also hopefully long-term globally.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. So I'm just going to ask a few questions about looking ahead towards the future. Where do you see Solo Boost the next few years? Are you focused on growing within New Zealand or international markets also on your radar?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, I'd love to know. Short term, we're focusing on festivals and events here in New Zealand and across Australia because that's where the product really shines. But we're also really interested in now targeting the emergency space sector, getting Solo Boost into things like survival kits, crisis backpacks, that sort of thing. Potentially even looking at retail stores such as hunting and fishing and more. We've already started talking with some companies in that industry, so it's looking really promising on that end. Longer term, obviously the goal is to expand globally and internationally. The need for backup power is global. It's not just a Kiwi problem. We'd love to see Solar Boost become a go-to safety solution worldwide and become a global brand.
Finally, I know you're young and very new to the entrepreneurial world, but what advice would you give to other entrepreneurs who want to build sustainable tech products?
My advice would be start with a real problem and maybe don't wait until your product's perfect before putting it out there. You'll learn a hell of a lot more actually by getting the product in people's hands, getting real life feedback, taking advantage while you're at university where you've got professors all around you to be able to ask those valuable questions and gain a whole lot of feedback. And not only that, if you want to build sustainable business, that's got to be your top priority, sustainability. You've got to bake that thing from the start. Don't treat it as just an extra feature. Yeah, it can make things harder at the beginning with more costs, more decisions. But in the long run, it makes your business stronger and a lot more relevant if you choose that sustainability outcome.
So from living with you this year, I've seen that you've obviously had to work very hard. But for the listeners, what would you say have been the biggest challenges with juggling university and starting a business? Because I know the uni workload can be quite hard and the living environment can also be quite challenging. What advice would you have for someone who's trying to do the same as you?
Yeah, there's definitely challenges at times. Uni can be full on, especially in your final year. And then trying to start and grow a business on top of that. Definitely met some late nights and a lot of juggling. The good thing was that I was studying a Bachelor of Entrepreneurship, so I could actually use Solar Boost in a lot of my assignments and projects. That made it feel like less like I was kind of splitting my time between both different things, like kind of merge them together. So it helped me learn a lot, really. It kind of worked out really well, which I was thankful of. But it was definitely still a balancing act looking back at it. But at the same time, it probably pushed me to manage my time a lot better and stay focused.
Yeah, no, it is quite impressive, really, doing university and starting a business. I know even with just my degree, I've had trouble juggling my time. Anyway, we'll go on to a reflection. Well, talking with Harry today, it's clear how threads of academic research, media reporting, and real business practice weave together. Scholars stress the need for circular design. The media calls attention to our mounting e-waste problem. And Harry's story shows how entrepreneurs can take meaningful steps to shift from disposable to durable solutions. E-waste is a massive challenge, but as we've heard, innovation doesn't start in the multinational boardroom. It can come from small startups in New Zealand that sees both a problem and a possibility. Harry, thanks so much for sharing your journey with us. Before we wrap up, I'm just going to do a quick fire round. I probably know most of them, but a lot of the listeners don't. So outside of work, where is your happy place? What do you love doing?
Oh, I love being on the golf course with my friends or potentially at the pub. Pub for some late nights. Yeah, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, everyone loves the pub. Would you call yourself an early bird or a night owl?
Despite some late nights working, I definitely call myself an early bird. I enjoy getting up and at it and attacking the day.
Yeah, much different to me. So as we're talking about technology, what is one app you couldn't live without?
Oh, I'd probably say Instagram. I do love an Instagram reel.
Nice little doom scroll.
Yeah, like you said, a nice doom scroll. Good way to chill you up for the night.
So as I've flattered with you, I probably know this and I've seen some of your cooking, but what is your favourite meal, either to cook or just to eat?
Oh, I'd say if I had to pick one meal to eat, it would be ribeye steak, maybe some sweet potato mash, and maybe a good red wine jus.
Yeah, that's good taste. That's good taste. Harry, thanks again for joining me and giving us an inside look at Solar Boost. It's inspiring to see how New Zealand entrepreneurs are building sustainability into tech from the ground up. For listeners, I'll include links to academic research and the New Zealand Herald article we've discussed in the show notes. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share it with a friend. And stay tuned for more conversations of future sustainable businesses. I'm William Lusk, and this has been Blowing Bubbles. See you next time. Boom, 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 boom.
All aboard, get on board. Boom, 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 boom. All aboard, get on board.
There's a train coming somewhere down the track. The people that ain't ready better step in back. This train has been running since time began. It's running on the love of your fellow man. All aboard,
all aboard,
you better get on board. All aboard,
all aboard,
child, you better get on board. People get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. All aboard, child, you better get on board. All aboard, Lord, you better get on board. People get ready, the train is going to Jordan. It's picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key, it opened the doors for boarding. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. I believe, I truly believe that one day the world will be full of love. I truly believe. There ain't no room for the hopeless sinner, one who would hurt all mankind just to save his own. We should have pity on those, cause their chances grow thinner. There's no hiding a place amongst the kingdom's throne. All aboard, child, you better get on board. 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 All aboard, Lord, you better get on board. All aboard, Lord, you better get on board. There's a train coming down the track. The people that ain't ready got to step in. Lord, but the train's been running since time began. It's for running on board of your fellow men. All aboard, child, you better get on board. All aboard.
With People Get Ready. And next up we have Zhen Qing, who's talking green buildings and what they call sustainability, environmental, social and governance.
Echo Ram, my name is Zhen Qing. I'm a postgraduate student in sustainable business at the University of Otago, and in this podcast I will be exploring one of the most pressing issues into the property market, green buildings and ESG. Over the next 20 minutes, I will share insights from the latest academic research, looking at recent real-world projects in London and bring in the perspective of a New Zealand business leader. Together, we will see how environmental, social, and governance factors are reshaping real estate, not just globally, but right here at home. So let's begin with academic evidence. Kadri and Electrode 2010 said the real estate sector offers a unique case for studying the financial impact of ESG factors due to its tangible assistance and the direct influence of ESG initiatives on property values and operational costs. Sustainable building practice, for instance, can reduce utility expenses and enhance marketability, directly influencing firm valuation. A 2025 paper by Herr Mackenhart and Drew asks a big question. Do ESG practice really pay off for real estate companies? The author's exam publicity lists real estate firms in 38 countries between 2015 and 2021. They measure two main things: market performance using 2BSQ, which essentially tells us how the market values a firm, and financial performance, looking at profitability and risk. Here's what they found. Companies that align with ESG standards perform better overall. They have stronger marketing valuations, they manage risk more efficiently, and they even reduce their cost of capital, that means investors view them as safer, more efficient, and more future-proof. But on the other hand, because they're always a but, this study also shows that adopting ESG isn't free of challenges. Firms often face higher general and administrative costs, and sometimes even short-term drops in net operating income. In other words, sustainability can be expensive sometimes. Digging a little bit deeper, the study reveals some interesting subtle differences. The environmental and social dimensions both drive better performance. Through the environmental side, doesn't really reduce systematic risk. Governance, the G in ESG, didn't directly boost market value, but it did strengthen internal risk management processes. So, while good governance might not make share prices jump overnight, it helps companies avoid costly mistakes in the long run. Another layer is context. The impacts of ESG varied depending on whether companies were in developed or emerging markets. In developed economics, ESG alignment tends to be rewarded more strongly by investors and stakeholders. Emerging economics, the benefits are there, but less pronounced. ESG isn't just a post-picking exercise for real estate firms. It's becoming part of the core business model, shaping how investors judge them, how capital flows, and ultimately how they compete in the global market. That's the theory, but how does it look like in the practice in the real world to see ESG principles in action? Let's jump from the spreadsheets of global real estate companies to the streets of London, where one building in particular is rewriting the rules of office design. In the early 2025, London achieved one of the most ambitious building Paradise SE11. From the outside, it might look like a new workplace, but this really story lies in the material. It's built from timber. Paradise SE11 has been called the UK's most sustainable office. By using energy, timber instead of steel and concrete, the project saved around 1,800 tons of carbon emissions, the equivalent of building 24 average homes. And here's the kicker. The building can be fully dismantled and recycled at the end of its life. But the environmental benefits are only one part of the story. In fact, the use of exposed timber creates a warm, climbing atmosphere. This shows the wood has acoustic and psychological benefits. It reduces noise and fosters new buildings. So the S in ESG, social impact, it's literally building in the walls. Of course, it wasn't all smooth sailing. Timber buildings raise unique challenges, especially around the influence. In that case, the biggest risk wasn't fair, as many people might expect. It was water damage to handle that. So the governance decides how risks were managed, regulated, and insured was a critical part of making Paradise SE11 possible. From an ESG lens, this project is a fascinating case. Environmental, it slashed emissions. Socially, it improves workplace well-being. And in terms of governance, it highlights the need for innovation in regulation and insurance to keep up with sustainable design. It also proves something that the HARE and extra researcher site point out that, yes, sustainable projects can carry short-term costs and obstacles, but also create long-term value. Tenants are increasingly looking for offices that align with their sustainable goals. Investors see buildings like this as a low-risk asset for the future, and developers who can deliver these projects are presenting themselves at the cutting edge of the market. So we've seen the evidence from research, and we've looked at one of the most examples of ESG-driven design in Europe. But how does this global conversation connect to us here in New Zealand? To find out, I've spoken with a local manager who shared how ESG and green buildings practice are all out, shaping the reality of business in other parts of the world.
So, what's your happy place?
My happy place is definitely the badminton court. Playing with friends after work gives me energy and joy. It's not just about winning or losing. It's the laughter, the teamwork, and the feeling of pushing myself. For me, it's a reminder that happiness often comes from simple experiences and good company, not from consuming more. In a way, that's also linked to sustainability, living well without excess.
Awesome. So can you tell me how did you get to where you are today?
I actually started out working at MITRE 10 in the trade department as a trade support. That was my first real step into the building industry. And it gave me a good foundation in understanding products, suppliers, and what tradies need day to day. Later, I set up a small company with my family, doing waterproofing, tiling, carpets, and other flooring installations. Over the time, I moved more into project management, coordinating jobs, dealing with clients, and learning their business side as well as the technical side. Playing badminton also helped me. It taught me this sampling and teamwork, which are skills I use every day in business too.
You really like badminton. So tell me about the moment in your life that led you with on sustainability, and how have you with changed since then?
Right. One turning point was after a heavy rainstorm, a site flooded because the drainage hadn't been planned properly. It damaged not only the project, but also affected the neighbors. That's really hit me. Sustainability isn't just about green labels, it's about responsibility. Since then, my view has shifted. It's not just an actor, it's part of doing the job properly. And even in daily life, I try to think the same way. For example, sometimes I carpool with friends to the badminton courts. It's healthier, saves money, and reduces emissions.
So, the nice question, could you tell me what small, simple thing people can do to in order to live more sustainability?
I'd say start small and practical. For me, it's about reusing and making things last. When I play badminton, I always collect old shuttles that's still reusable, and I use them for warm-up. It reduces waste and makes the new shuttles last longer. I also prefer to buy durable gear instead of cheap equipment that breaks quickly. Sustainability doesn't have to mean big investment. It can start with everyday habits like that.
Okay, so the last question, studies that shows ESG has a bigger impact in developed markets than emerging ones. Where do you think New Zealand sits on that situation?
To be honest, in our small installation company, we don't really feel ESG as a direct influence. Most of our clients focus more on price, timing, and quality. But in the wider industry, especially for bigger developments, ESG is becoming more of a factor. Things like energy efficiency, resilience, or council requirements. So while we don't feel it strongly day to day, I can see it's growing in importance.
Have you clients or stakeholders asked specifically about environmental or social features in recent your project?
In our project, not really. Most clients just want the job done well and on budget. I haven't had clients asking directly about environmental or social features. But I know in bigger projects, it's already happening. People are asking for sustainable flooring, low emission materials, and designs that are more community friendly. But for small business like us, it hasn't reached us yet. But I think it will in the future as demand grows.
Awesome. Thank you. To bring this closer to the end, I spoke with one of local business leaders who wishes to remain anonymous about her views on sustainability. For her, sustainability isn't something abstract. It's already part of her daily life. She mentioned something as simple as how she goes to play badminton instead of driving every time. She looks for ways to make small, sustainable choices in her routine. That may sound minor, but it reflects an important shift. Sustainability is no longer just about big corporate strategies. It's also about everyday habits that add up over time. When we turned to the construction sector, she highlighted that the big companies are already making visit efforts. Companies are increasingly conscious about sourcing and selecting materials that reduce environmental impact, whether it's lower carbon concrete, recycled products, or even experimenting with alternatives like timber. Sustainability is starting to influence the design and supply chain in construction. Her perspective was refreshingly straightforward. She wasn't talking about complicated financial metrics or ESG frameworks. Instead, she reminded me that sustainability is both globally and local, both big picture and personal. On one hand, we see massive projects like London's Paradise SE11 proving that buildings can be designed from the ground up to deliver environmental and social benefits. On the other hand, we also see individuals like her making conscious choices in their daily lives. As New Zealand business taking steady steps towards greener practices. And perhaps that's the real lesson here. Sustainability in real estate isn't just about cutting-edge projects and corporate reports. It's also about everyday decisions by individuals, by companies, and by communities that gather shift the market and create a movement for change. Thank you for listening. I'm Zhen Qin and hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Yeah, this one's for Lizzie.
Bluebirds fly.
Bluebirds fly.
And
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Today we've been listening to contributions for Coming Up for Air. We heard from Tom Colburn, William Lusk, and Zhen Chen. And we just listened to Adija's Rainbow. I like that. And we're going out to Betty Ann with Slow Burn. We're broadcast every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. Brought to you by the Sustainable Blends team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. I'm Sam McMahon. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Matiwa.
To unlearn my life without you, I was meant to do life with you, to be seen and understood, but you never could. Just hold on for me. I'm not gonna sit around and waste my love. I'm gonna overcome this down. I'll keep it simple, one foot in front. One day, breathe in, let me feel the sun. Learning when we were together, but my yearning is forever reality as it is. Snowbird, I'm in. More than just a show. The memory, oh my heart, just won't let it be. Holding on and keeping myself in peace. But my yearning is forever reality as it is. Just a show, a slow burn. I'm in, wrestling with my own. One foot in front. One day, breathe in. Let me feel the sun. Learning when we were together. But my yearning is forever. Reality is it is. More than just a show, I was. I'm in a snowbird, yeah. Ooh. Wrestling with my own, in my own. I'm in a snowbird, yeah. More than just a show. Thank you.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.